As the daily count of people who have COVID-19 increases, state and federal health officials are warning that this is just the beginning, both in terms of response and the number of patients who will require medical attention. And we have an update on the numbers of coronavirus cases here in our state just since last hour. According to the state, there are now 234 cases across Arizona, and there have been two deaths because of the virus. On Friday, State Health Director Dr. Kara Crist warned that Arizona would not be the exception.
We do expect to see more COVID-19 in Arizona, and with that, we expect to see increased hospitalizations and additional pressure on our healthcare system.
It's that pressure on the system that has officials most concerned. Crist has been upfront about potential shortages of medical supplies, particularly ventilators for people with respiratory problems. And she's encouraging Arizonans to help avoid a rush on emergency rooms by staying home.
Many, if not most, individuals will experience mild symptoms. To protect our healthcare system, we recommend that people with mild symptoms of the disease stay at home, get plenty of rest, drink lots of fluids, and call their healthcare provider if they have questions regarding which medications you should take to treat your symptoms.
Biodesign scientists are working to develop better and faster testing for the coronavirus and tracking the spread as it infects people all over the world. As Crist has repeatedly said, there are simply not enough tests for everyone who wants to be tested. She's urging calm, even as she and her team prepare for a spike in cases.
We need everyone to understand that in the coming weeks and months, we will see large numbers of cases and people will become critically ill. We understand how this can cause concern and anxiety in our communities, but my team and the state's public health professionals are engaged in this response 24/7.
There are researchers all over the country and the world working to develop vaccines for the new coronavirus, and three of them are here at ASU's Biodesign Institute, which is working with everything from plant-based healing to learning lessons from past smallpox epidemics to find answers. Dr. Joshua LeBaire is the executive director of ASU's Biodesign Institute, and I spoke with him earlier more about all of this, from answering all of our questions about just how easily this virus is spread and how deadly it seems to be, to how he thinks we can best limit the spread of the disease.
Right now, the most important thing that we can do in the context of this epidemic is to, as quickly as possible, identify those people who actually have the virus and separate them from those who don't, and then let time do its thing, because what's going to happen is while they're separated, they're going to clear the virus, they'll become no longer infectious, and then they can, you know, get back into mixing with everybody else. And we know that this is a contagious virus, so we know that people who actively have the virus, it's very easy for them to spread it to other individuals. And so that's why it's important to separate those who have it from those who don't. Obviously, the advice people are being given is what's called social distancing, the idea that you want to keep a sort of 6-foot distance from other people as much as possible, because we know the virus spreads through droplets in the air. So if you're close to people, those droplets can be inhaled, and then that can infect individuals. So keeping distance, and that's why we're trying to limit crowds. I know for a culture like ours, where people like to be near each other, that's challenging. The goal is to get through this initial period so that we can limit the spread of the virus, and then hopefully people can get back together again. But right now, the multiplier on this virus appears to be, you know, somewhere between 2 and 3 individuals per case. So each person who has this is spreading it to 2 or 3 people at a time.
Wow.
That leads to an exponential growth, and we want to avoid that.
If you're talking about the key here being finding out who has it and separating them from everyone else, then you're really talking about testing, right? And that's been an issue. Are we too late on that front, or where does that stand?
We are not too late on that front. We are behind on that front. So our country needs to move faster at getting testing set up, because testing is desperately needed throughout the country, and we don't have enough of it in place. But nonetheless, we are not too late. You know, if you think about it, the infection in China was much further along when they got their testing up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And they nonetheless succeeded at significantly blunting the spread of the virus in that country. And then other countries as well have initiated massive testing programs, and they too have blunted the travel of the virus. So we just need to get moving very fast here.
So you mentioned social distancing, which we're all trying to practice right now. Is the idea here just that the virus is in the community? The idea is sort of protecting the healthcare system from seeing everyone come at once?
That's exactly right. Where you've seen places where they've had high mortality rates, It's in places where the medical system has been overwhelmed. And what you end up with is, you know, numerous people in the hospital and doctors being forced to decide who gets the ventilator and who doesn't.
Right.
And we don't want that to happen. So the main goal here is to limit the spread of the virus as much as we possibly can so that the medical system can absorb fewer numbers of cases without being overwhelmed. That's
right.
Really the goal.
Right. So we've heard this, that like that's why you saw so many deaths in Italy, because the healthcare system was overwhelmed. So
yes.
Is this about how well prepared or how quickly everyone floods our healthcare system more than it is about how deadly this virus is?
I think it's a combination. I think there are definitely people who get a very strong response to this virus who can get very ill. And we certainly know from the information from China, where they have the best data, that older people, people with chronic respiratory illnesses, people with poorly controlled diabetes, things like that correlate to worse outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So we know who the risky population is. And we know that this virus, from those data and from other data, does have, in people at risk individuals, a high mortality rate or morbidity rate. We also know that if you give people supportive care, you can often get them through this. If you have enough resources to it. So there's no specific treatment right now for this virus. I know people are working on it, but there is, you know, clinical care. There's good, you know, basically symptomatic care that over time, you know, if you can get people through the initial burst of the virus, you know, they can recover.
Do you know at this point, or is it too rapidly evolving, you know, if things like comparisons to the flu and how deadly the flu is are inaccurate? It seemed at the beginning that this was relatively comparable, but now I'm hearing maybe it's clearly worse.
I think it's probably worse than your average flu, but maybe not as bad as some of the most severe flus.
Hmm.
So it's in that range is what the best data look like to me right now. So it seems to be worse than the average year in the U.S. for the flu, but not as bad as like some of like the Spanish flu and some of the really terrible outbreaks that have occurred in the past.
So I know, I'm sure because of what you do and because of what you're working on right now, you have everyone in the world asking you for advice. What are you telling them? What are the best things that you can advise people to do right now?
Well, I mean, certainly I would maintain social distance. I would avoid crowds. If you do develop symptoms, if you get a fever, if you start getting a cough, get tested. I mean, I know that's easy to say, but I think hopefully soon there will be enough testing available that people can get tested. And if you test positive, let all the people know who you've been in contact with that they too should get tested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that was done in China that has been particularly effective was they set up the old-fashioned case tracking. So this goes back to the days and the way we cured smallpox from the planet. Is we had teams of people who followed each person who got the illness, talked to everyone that they were in contact with and got them tested, and then, you know, kept working out and out and out until they basically found the end and then got all those people under quarantine until the virus passed. So I think that's the kind of thing that we need to be thinking about doing here to kind of prevent the spread.
What do you tell them in terms of how fearful they should be? People are so worried about this and so scared at this point. Is that effective, I guess?
Well, I don't know that fear is not the appropriate response here. 80% of people who get this virus have mild or sometimes even undetectable symptoms.
Right.
So the majority of people don't have any problem. There's another, you know, 15 or 20% that require greater attention, and then a very small percent that have severe responses. By and large, most people who get this are not going to have a bad outcome. I wouldn't be fearful of it, but I would be attentive to it, because I think the goal here, once again, is this notion that we want, as the epidemiologists say, we want to blunt the curve. You know, I think one of the things that our group, by our group I mean the Biodesign Institute, is interested in is also coming up with additional testing modes.
Yeah.
My group is actually looking at a different kind of test. So all the current tests that are available right now look for the RNA of the virus. So they're looking for the nucleic acids of the virus itself. And those are important because those tell you people who are actively shedding virus.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who may have had the virus, but we don't know it because they're not actively making virus anymore. And so we're developing a test to look in the blood to see if they make antibodies against the virus. And that will be helpful, will tell us people who have been infected that we didn't know were infected. And that will help us track down why we're suddenly seeing cases of the virus where there's no obvious connection.
Mm-hmm. So then what is the end game here? Like, are we looking at eventually everyone being exposed to this and hoping that by the time those people with weaker immune systems or older folks are, they will be able to be better treated? How do these kinds of viruses play out?
Well, I think that eventually this will become something like the flu in the sense that it will always be around.
Right.
With luck, we will stop the virus in this outbreak and blunt the curve so that it, when it spreads, it will spread at a level that doesn't overwhelm the medical system. But I don't think we're going to eradicate it. What we're going to do is just keep it at a lower level in the community and then from there hope that we can start establishing immunity and always keep it at a low level.
So this will be something we may all get another kind of flu shot for in the future.
I think that's very possible, yes.
Yeah. All right. That is Dr. Joshua LeBaire, Executive Director and Professor at ASU's Biodesign Institute. Dr. LeBaire, thank you so much for joining us to tell us about this.
Okay. I'm very happy to do so, and thank you.